Welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners across the country where the program is broadcast, particularly the local traditional owners, the Jagera, Yagera, Turrbal and Yugalpil peoples, the Yugambeh, Mananjali, Kombamiri, Noonuckle, Quandamooka peoples. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. And welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country via the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world via the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, what a big weekend. I've still been unable to find out the results of the Koori knockout down south, but North Queensland, so I think it was Torres Strait side, won the knockout here in out at Briggs Road. And they played Yarrabah in the finals. And the women's team, I think it was a dream team that went through almost unscathed. The women's team made up of a lot of young ones from up Cherbourg and surrounds. Great team, fantastic team. They virtually don't allow points to be scored against them, I suppose it'd be fair to say. Leading up to the finals, I think it was a semi-final I saw on Saturday, those women denied their opposition any possession of the ball whatsoever in the first half. I've never seen it, ever. No possession in the first half for the opposition. The Dream Team got the ball from the kickoff. They received it and kept it. Handed it back for the kickoff in the second half. So there you go. They were an amazing side. Some great young talent there. Good talent right across the board with the footy, the under-15s and the women and the men's and stuff. Some great talent. The young Chrissy Sando there, formerly of South, but who was he with last year? Parramatta. He was on field running around there. And I'm not sure of any other. There probably would have been others. There usually is. Other NRL stars. Wasn't it great to see Sydney Swans win the AFL? And wasn't it great to see Melbourne Storm, two out-of-town sides, both codes, handed over the big Premiership Cup to teams that don't live in the they're interstaters or they're out-of-towners, so to speak. But what complete rubbish was that to have Andrew Johns sitting up there alongside of all those greats? Man found guilty of drug taking and stuff. But that's Sydney for you. That's the NRL for you. Just ridiculous, outrageous. With a blemish like that on his record, he's still... It's the old boys' brigade. And that's why you've got Radio Maroon. State of origin time, Radio Maroon, the Courier Mail and 98.9 FM. Because you just... Can't sit back and cop what they dish out from NRL headquarters and from Sydney with NRL stuff. There's a fine example of it, Andrew Johns, added to the list of the greats. Wendell Saylor might not make it to the list of the greats, but he also did his time and copped the penalty for the drugs and stuff and came back to change codes and still excel. Make a name for himself. But there's a big inconsistency there with the NRL and how they treat their people. Johns was right. If you're black, you step back. That's how I see it. And you'll see it the way you wish to. This weekend, Sunday was the 30th anniversary of the Commonwealth Games in Brisbane. This weekend is some big celebrations down at Musgrave Park, so you get along to it. Tent City's going up, there's forums, there's a concert, all starting on Friday. There's a dinner Friday night. And you can contact Natalie Lewis on 0438 781 121, 0438 781 121, Natalie Lewis, or Wayne Wharton, 0408 064 900. They're the people to contact if you... They're looking for artists and support and assistance, donations, contributions, all kind of things. Give them a call down there, 0438 781 121 or 0408 064 900. My guest today, I'm having difficulty with this phone system. I'm not real happy with it, but we'll track him down. We're talking to John Oster. John is the CEO of Indigenous Art Code Limited, and it's in relation to a mandatory code of conduct for the First Nations art industry. That's what we're talking about. There's been a voluntary code in place for some years. Hasn't worked all that well. So now there's a push and some strong arguments for a mandatory code of conduct. So let's go to a song by Glenn Scuthorpe, and we'll see if we can come back with something, with our guest, not with something, with somebody, with John Oster, the CEO. Stay with us on 989 FM or your First Nation station by the National Indigenous Radio Service. And my guest, John Oster, the CEO of Indigenous Art Code Limited, talking to me from Alice Springs, and formerly the CEO of Des Art. He was there for a bit over 7 years and has now moved across to Indigenous Art Code Limited some 18 months ago. Welcome to the program, John. How are you?
G'day, Tiger. I'm really good, thank you.
Very good, and thanks for joining us today. Tell us a little about your background, where you grew up, and how you come to be involved in with First Nations people, particularly art.
Well, Tiger, I'm more than 60 years old now. Hello.
Yeah, mate, still there.
Oh, okay. Something went funny on my phone.
All right, no, you're right.
Okay. So I went to work in the Kimberley in an Aboriginal art centre at Balgo and met some wonderful people there and got into the art game about 15 years ago. And after that, I went to work in Derby at the Mowanjum community and still got a lot of good friends there. And after that, I came to work in Alice Springs Des Art, which is an organisation representing all of the art centres across Central Australia. There's about 40 of them representing 3,000 artists. And we did some amazing work at Des Art with infrastructure and training and getting a lot more Aboriginal people involved as art workers through the industry. And then 18 months ago, I came to work for the Indigenous Art Code.
All right. And the art code, what's the objective? What's the art code about?
Okay. There's been a lot of stories about the Aboriginal art industry. You know, most of these stories are good stories. But there's a dark side to this industry. And we all have heard stories of how artists sometimes have got ripped off, not paid properly, they've been cheated. And so some years ago, in 2007, the Australian government had a big inquiry into the Aboriginal art industry. The Senate inquiry looked at the whole industry. They went around and talked to people all around Australia, to artists, to art organisations, to dealers, to galleries, and they worked out what was needed for this industry. And the big thing that they found was needed was a code of conduct. Now, a code of conduct is really just a set of rules. There were no rules in this industry before. It was a free-for-all, and people could do whatever they wanted to do. But we've now established a code of conduct, which is a set of rules, which says that artists should be treated with respect. Artists should not be treated badly. Dealers should not bully artists. Dealers should not tell lies about artworks. Dealers should have proper agreements with artists, and they should report to artists about their business. How many paintings have been sold, what money has come through, what money has been paid, so that artists get the right story. That's what the code is, and we have an organisation now called the Indigenous Art Code Limited, and dealers and artists can sign up to that company and become members, and by becoming members, they agree to abide by the rules of the Indigenous Art Code. There are now more than 200 people and organisations across Australia who are members of this code and put their hand up and say, we will treat artists fairly. Perhaps I'll stop there, Tiger, and you can ask me some questions about that, because it's pretty involved.
It certainly is, and so it should be, because it's sort of, I know, it's been too open for abuse for far too long, and it's time that it was addressed. But look, I must say there's breaking news here in the studio that an hour or so ago, the Tent Embassy tents in Musgrave Park all were burnt down. Nobody injured, but yes, nobody's injured. Police will be investigating. Something like three tents and a tarp up there, all burnt down. Could be something suspicious there. They're not too sure, but it's a bit strange. I can't see a fire spreading from one tent to another unless they were actually joined up. But these tents were all separated by at least a few metres.
That's disturbing news, Tiger, isn't it?
It is disturbing news. So that's at Musgrave Park here in Brisbane. The Tent Embassy has been burnt down this morning. No doubt it will be resurrected again, I'm sure. So back to my guest, John Oster, the CEO of Indigenous Art Code Limited. John, there was also talk, or it may have been introduced, like a royalty payment. There was some discussion about with the sale of artwork that would follow that painting and go back to the artist each time it changed hands. Is that?
Yes, Tiger. This is called resale royalty.
Yeah. Is that actually law? Is that actually law?
Yes, it is law.
Right, yeah.
It came into law in 2010, so it's been working for about 2 years.
What's the report on that?
This was a scheme to give artists all over Australia some benefit when their work resold. So we all know that work gets sold at a particular price, but then sometime later people might sell it again and get a lot more money. And so the government agreed to introduce a law that when the work is resold later on, the artist will get a small royalty payment of 5% of whatever that resale price is. And this doesn't just apply to Indigenous artists, this applies to all artists in Australia. But it's been a big benefit to Aboriginal people. And over the past 2 years, there's been something like $600,000 in royalties go to artists all over Australia, to Aboriginal people, in remote areas, Alice Springs, Queensland, Western Australia. And it seems that Aboriginal people are benefiting from this scheme. It's, in my view, it's very successful. There are people who don't like it. Some of the dealers don't like it and think that it's making it hard to do business. I don't agree with that. This is a similar scheme to the way musicians have got royalty payments for a long time. And it's something I think that artists deserve.
Most certainly. And it's about time it was recognised and introduced, legislated.
Yeah.
Now, what have been some of the issues with the voluntary code? The fact that it's voluntary doesn't ever seem to have any real teeth. What is it that's people not too keen to embrace it, the dealers? Where does the problem lie?
The problem is, first of all, that it's voluntary and people can opt in and opt out. We had a dealer in Queensland who was a member of this voluntary code, but when he found out that someone was going to make a complaint against him, he immediately resigned from the code so that he wouldn't have any responsibility. And we found that although we've dealt with about 20 cases in the past 18 months, there's been no real change in the industry. All of those things that were going wrong about 5 years ago are still going wrong. Now, we need to understand that there are a lot of good people in this industry doing the right thing. There are a lot of benefits flowing to artists. So let's keep in mind that the industry is a really good industry for people. But on the fringes, there's a lot of bad things that go on. We've seen, for instance, we had a case where a dealer sold a big work worth more than $100,000 to one of the big institutions in this country, and the artist got next to nothing. We've had instances where a lady in Central Australia who was an artist was just kidnapped and taken off on a trip without her family knowing. And she was away for months and people just took her away to shops to paint. We've seen a lot of cases where dealers won't tell the right money story to artists. So these things that were bad in the industry 5 years ago are still bad. And the voluntary code that we've had has not changed anything.
How is art defined within the art code system? Does it include incorporate artifacts and things like that? How is it defined?
Art is visual art. That means art that you can look at and see and touch. That means paintings, jewellery, weavings, carvings, sculptures, and work of that nature.
All right.
Tiger, are you asking about traditional items like...
Right across the board, I suppose, I would think, including traditional. Yeah. There's contemporary, there's the contemporary art, the modern-day art.
That's right.
Some of it could be called dot art and things like that. There's the sculptures by the likes of a local artist, Laurie Nielsen, where he's got the barbed wire emus.
Yes, all of those things.
Yeah.
But the other thing that applies to is old secret sacred objects. And there is a section in the code that says that all of those old objects need to be treated with respect and people can't go and just deal with them without permission. And that we think that's very important for respecting and preserving culture as well as current art business today.
All right. Mm. Artists generally, they're embracing this idea, like it has the support of artists generally?
We've had great support from artists, Tiger. We've had a whole pile of artists sign up to the code. A lot of people don't know about it yet. And so almost every week we get someone ring us up with a problem, and it might be an artist, and they say, oh, that's a good idea, let's join up to that code. And we'd be looking to get a whole lot more people to support the code. It would be great if they did that. And they can go to our website, or I'll give you my phone number too. If people would like to ring me up, if they've got a problem, or if they would like to find out more about the code, I'd be happy to take their call.
Yeah, please announce your number and even website, web address or something if might help too.
Yeah, so my phone number is 0408 302 873. And the code website is www.incode.com. indigenousartcode.org. That's O-R-G. And our contact details are on that website as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, Tiger, we've kind of gone as far as we can go, we think, with a voluntary code. So now we're going to the government to make this stronger, so that the code will not just be voluntary, but those principles will be written into the laws of Australia. And that's a big thing. It's a really big step to say to the government and to the people of Australia, if you cheat an Aboriginal artist, you are breaking the law, and the law enforcement agencies can come and get you. And that's where we want to go with this, Tiger. We want those people who are doing the wrong thing to be accountable to the law.
Most certainly, yes.
So we are asking support right around Australia at the moment. It's called a mandatory code. That is a code of conduct which is mandated. That is, it is compulsory. And that means it would be written into the regulations of the laws of Australia. So we are writing up a big report that will go to the minister in Canberra in the next week or so. And after that, we hope he will do some investigations and talk to people around Australia about whether they would want this going into the laws of Australia. And then, obviously, that law needs to be written and passed through the Parliament in Canberra. So it's a long and difficult process, and it does require the support of a lot of people.
All right. Well, people, you would like people then even to put their shoulder behind the wheel. I mean, they could send emails to the minister, if we know which minister that is. Would you like that to happen, yes. Like a bit of lobbying and people doing their things?
Yes, that would be terrific. Or they can send those emails to me and I will pass them on.
All right.
My email address is john@indigenousartcode.org. Be happy to take people's call and their support and pass that on to the minister.
Which minister? Minister who?
Crean.
Crean, Simon Crean.
Minister Simon Crean.
All right. Okay, well, we can be good if people was able to take action, do something, be supportive of this, because there certainly needs to be addressed. And see that our artists get their only that which is rightfully theirs, which they're dues. Yeah. All right, mate. Anything else you want to say?
There are a lot of cases that I could mention, Tiger. This is not just an Australian problem. This is a problem overseas as well. We had a case just last week where a woman, an artist, rang up and said, "My designs have been pinched by a designer overseas." So this designer from Poland copied her paintings and made the design for a whole hotel out of this woman's painting. And the designer obviously got a big paycheck for designing a hotel, but the artist got nothing. So we want to do what's right for artists and get a better deal for them across the board by putting this into the laws of our country.
So what can be done in this particular case? Nothing now? There's no laws where there's anyone can be prosecuted?
It would seem not at this stage, but we are trying to work with agencies to get a better deal for that artist.
Mm. All right. Very disturbing that this sort of activity takes place and there's no laws for protection or for prosecution. All right, John. Well, you're on the right track in calling for support and taking the steps that Indigenous Art Code Limited is doing to get legislation in place, not a voluntary code, get it legislated and make it mandatory. Thanks very much for your time today with us.
Thank you, Tiger. It's been a great pleasure.
You have a good day and keep up the good work.
Cheers.
Thank you very much. That's John Oster, CEO of Indigenous Art Code Limited. based in Alice Springs, and a big advocate for getting things right for artists, particularly First Nations artists, in where their rights are recognised, where the Indigenous Art Code becomes legislation. So support that where you can. Simon Crean's the minister. Let him know something needs to be done. It's gone on for too long. Take a break for a song by Andy Alberts. Then I'm going to come back with somebody from the Tent Embassy to get an update on just how serious, what degree of damage is done down there. I'm going to be talking to Sam Watson for an update on the Tent Embassy. Sam, how are you?
Good, brother. How are you?
Yeah, very well, very well. Some sad news, disturbing news. We hear the tents have been burnt down at Musgrave Park, Tent Embassy site. Can you tell us what's happened there?
We first heard the news over the ABC radio and then we bolted in. The police were already here and the fireys. So what happened is a fire started. And at this point, we don't know whether it was deliberately started or whether it was a spark from a fire or something. So there's been significant damage to the embassy site. The police are working with us. They have sealed the area off and their forensic people are going through there at the moment. The fireys were able to put out the flames very quickly. So thankfully, no one was hurt. So this is a very upsetting, traumatic moment for us all because a lot of us, you know, our whole community had a spiritual investment in this area, in this place. So and to see it reduced to this, it's just very sad moment for our mob. Yeah.
There was a number of tents, I mean, that were burnt down this morning?
Yeah, looking at it from this side because the police have said to seal the area off and they're conducting their business because what they want to do is make sure that no one can wander through and compromise the site. So that's understandable. We're working with them. They're going to try to get the site back to us as quickly as possible, but there has been some significant damage to a number of the tents, the cooking tent, etc. But like I said, the fireys were on site very quickly and they're able to ensure that a lot of the material has, you know, a lot of the gear has survived. So we'll be back in business as quickly as possible because this weekend, of course, is the anniversary of the Commonwealth Games protest. So
that's
we'll
right.
Make sure that we're up and doing business as people arrive.
Sam, those tents seem to be separated by a reasonable sort of space, some, I think, 5 or 6 metres apart.
That's right. Yeah,
and it's a bit strange. A bit strange to sort of try and understand how flames might spread from one tent to another sort of thing, you know?
That's right, because the sacred fire was a good sort of 5-10 metres away from the tent. So we're puzzled and we're really going to be interested in what the forensic people tell us because the young people who are on staff here have kept the place absolutely spotless. They're out every morning with the rakes and there was no loose rubbish. There was, you know, a clean, well-managed site. And it's a mystery to us just how this happened. So hopefully the police will be able to give some indication very quickly.
Now, a couple of weeks ago, the generator caught on fire.
Yeah, unfortunately. As we all know, a lot of us who are camping know that things like this happen. And that's why it's important to manage the sites properly so that so that nobody does get hurt and other gear gets damaged. So, but looking at the embassy now, there's been quite significant damage. So something.
What's going to be required, people? You want people to sort of come on down with anything? Can people assist any of our listeners or people? What would you require there?
Please, we just need tents and gear because we've got a big mob of people coming in from now virtually to join with us when we celebrate the anniversary of the Commonwealth Games protest back in 1982. We've got the big day of protest starting on Friday. That launches into a full weekend of action. So we're going to honour all those wonderful people, all those great patriots who were there with us, leading us back in 1982 and looking back on that time.
Do you want people to donate, to loan, like in the likes of tents and tarps and things? Maybe they could even just loan? But you'd be calling for donations across the board. I'm just thinking of options here. If people got tents sitting around, they mightn't use until holiday time at Christmas or whatever. They might want to bring them down and loan them. But there's also firewood and stuff like that also. cooking utensils and things? I mean, what is
anything?
Anything and everything.
Anything that people can bring, because council has given us use of the entire Musgrave Park area for the weekend. So if people can bring gear down, that'd be most appreciated. And if it is on a loan situation, if they clearly mark their gear with a tag, so that when it comes time to return, that we can easily get them back into the right hands. So people, we are looking for everything, please. Tents, any sort of camp equipment, chairs, even food, because we've got a lot of our mob are coming down now because they're very, very traumatised with what's happened to these tents. You know, as I said, our community is really bound up in this land here and in the embassy.
Sam, talking to Coco last week and Natalie, they're saying they would like some artists, but more so they would like a sound system and maybe a stage, if anybody out there had something like that to bring on down for use and set up for the weekend, yeah?
Yes, please. Anything like that, because we're expecting a big mob in here, and we just don't have the cash reserves to be able to hire that sort of equipment, and particularly now, because the gear that we're going to have to replace here is fairly substantial. So this has really knocked us back, but please, you know, it's business as usual. The Aboriginal Tent Embassy the Sovereign Tent Embassy is still up and doing, and we'll keep on doing, regardless of the things that happen, you know.
Be the regular Tuesday afternoon meeting this evening?
Yes, yeah, we'll get people together right through the day, because a lot of our mob are turning up, and like I said, they're very, very upset. So
they're rolling in, that's good.
We'll need a lot of support and a lot of, you know, just a bit of a hug and a bit of a cry. Yeah, for sure. We're strong mob. It takes a lot more than this to knock us down, mate.
That's for sure.
How's your day, brother? Yeah.
All right. Well, look, thanks for joining us there and letting the mob know just what's going on. Certainly appreciate it.
Take care.
Thanks, Sam. Bye now. Sam Watson giving us an update on the situation at the Tent Embassy site down there in Musgrave Park. Fire this morning, burnt all the tents and everything down. And numbers that you can call if you're able to help out: firewood, tucker, tarps, tents. Number is 0408 064 900. That's Coco. Another number, 0438 781 121. That's Natalie. Give them a buzz if you want to know what's required or how to make contact and get on down there. Musgrave Park Tent Embassy. Just talking to Norman from Kalgoorlie, 96.3 FM. They're tuning in to Let's Talk, and they want to make contact with the embassy mob. Thanks for the call, Norman, and a warm cheerio out to all you mob. 96.3 FM in Kalgoorlie. Great to have you on board. Now, tomorrow's guest is Warren Roberts. Warren Roberts is the CEO of Yarn. And Yarn is Youth Awareness Raising Network. It's an organisation which seeks to develop relationships and understanding of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander culture in our university communities. And Warren says, and I quote, "Building relationships through the power of a story, to be a part of the dream, to inspire all Australians to share the stories and culture of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people." I'll say of First Nations people. So we're talking to Warren tomorrow about this organisation and what they do. But the dream to inspire all Australians to share the stories and culture of our mob. Very important. Very important to encourage to encourage all Australians, because that's where you can establish a more solid your own identity. If you haven't already got it established, it can assist with identity. It can assist with engaging. It can assist with connecting. Can assist with relationships, establishing that relationship with First Nations people, and with the place you call home, our land, our country. So. Any opportunity you have to establish this, to assist in making that connection to country, the better this place will be, the better you'll be. While we continue to have sick country, we'll continue to have sick people, be they First Nations or recent arrivals, settler society. So we can all work towards better relationships through connection to country and focusing on healing country. Healing country and healing people. That's a lot of effort required. That's tomorrow's guest. Thursday's guests are Auntie Lilla Watson and Auntie Mary Graham back with us again on their regular monthly presentations. And that's going to be, again, a good discussion, I would expect. They usually are. Now, this weekend, of course, don't forget, people get on down there, can start rolling in on Friday or even Thursday. But Friday, there's a rally at Roma Street Forum for a march. That's midday, Roma Street Forum to Musgrave Park, the 30th anniversary of the Commonwealth Games protests. There's also going to be a screening on Friday, 4:30. There's an open ceremony. There's a dinner to honour veterans. And the screening of the film We Fight was filmed in 82. And that film was filmed by the Black Film Unit. That was set up down in Redfern, the Black Film Unit. Madeline McGrady was one of the members of the film unit. My mother, Maureen Watson, my brother, John Bales, and myself. And that was set up down there with a small grant from Film Australia or somebody. Yeah, Film Australia, I think. And a very good man helping us out down there, Russ Herman, one of the teachers, media teachers at the UTS on Broadway. Russ Herman came along. He put some of his own money up front, first up, just to get the film put in stock and stuff like that. But the Black Film Unit, this is their film, We Fight. Madeline McGrady will be bringing that film along to share with people. Very good to see that being out in public. Got a caller on the line. Let's see who we've got. Hello, how are you? Welcome to Let's Talk.
Roachie, yeah.
Roachie, what would you like to say?
Mate, you must be known all over Australia for your rally.
You think so?
Yeah, well, you were on TV last night.
Oh, you saw that too, did you?
Yeah, about the Commonwealth Games.
Yeah.
I had a lot to do with that on the council building them places.
All right. Good on you. Yeah. All right.
Chandler and all them, Kiwi Poo and a lot of the other places.
Yeah.
Doing them for the Commonwealth Games.
Have they gotten much use, Roachie, like those places that were built for the Commonwealth Games? Have they been utilised, or could they be utilised more, some of these stadiums and parks and what have you, venues, facilities? Yeah?
Yeah, the Kiwi Poo they're going to do it up to use again.
Yeah, rightly so.
For the Commonwealth and Chandler and that, they're already doing for the velodrome for bike racing and swimming.
Okay.
So they might just update, and there's a few places over Stradbroke Island I think they'll be doing up for it.
Really, on Stradbroke?
I think so.
Yeah.
Because they trained most of the blokes here during the last one.
Okay, interesting. All right.
I'm not on the council anymore, I'm retired, but yeah, we did a lot of work around, like sewage work and all that, and connected places up and all that.
Oh, good one.
And did a lot of work for them, yeah.
All right, mate.
I see you're on there, and I quite often see you along by Desert Road, either in your car or on the motorbike.
Yeah. All right, mate.
All right, have a good one, Tony.
Good on you, buddy. Thanks for your call. You have a great day, Roachie. Bye, mate.
Same to you. Bye.
See you, mate. Yes, there's one of our regulars, Roachie's, giving in for a bit of an update on things. And good to hear from our callers. It's getting close for time for me to go. I'm back tomorrow morning with Let's Talk. Going to really enjoy a short week this week, isn't it great? You all have a good day and stick around and tune into your First Nation station for Let's Talk.